It's 7:43. I'm Teresa Wills. On this West Virginia morning, we hear how one court program that helps bring families back together is adapting in this time of social distancing.
We've ordered books, one for the child, one for the parent. That way, when they video chat, the parents can, you know, read the book and the child can have the same book in their hand looking at the pictures at the same time.
And some tips on how to get outside and learn some new history. This is West Virginia Morning. Before the coronavirus changed all of our lives, five counties in West Virginia launched a new program called Family Treatment Court. It's supposed to help unify families when parents need help dealing with addiction. Ultimately, advocates for the program hope it will reduce the number of children in the state's overwhelmed foster care system. The program is showing some promising results. Emily Allen reports that now, with social distancing, judges and other stakeholders with family treatment courts are forced to get creative to keep the program going.
Family Treatment Court gives families an alternative route through the court system when it comes to civil abuse and neglect cases. For parents who struggle with addiction and risk losing custody, the extra support from judges can help them with recovery and getting their kids back. 8 months after launching the first Family Treatment Court in West Virginia, Boone County Judge William Thompson says the coronavirus hit just as a few of the families he works with were ready for reunification.
We've actually got a few more we talked about today of being able to reunify here in the next week or two.
But in March, the State Department of Health and Human Resources began advising virtual visits instead of physical visits for families involved with Child Protective Services. Then the state Supreme Court froze in-person hearings. All of this means that some parents who would now be reunited with their kids are stuck in limbo.
We had one young mother today who's doing wonderful in the program and is at the point to be considered for reunification, and probably but for the coronavirus would probably have had her child back with her at this point.
Thompson recalls that this mother recently learned her infant had crawled for the first time. He says that she was excited.
But you could also tell it was breaking her heart that she didn't get to see it.
In normal circumstances, Family Treatment Court functions best when parents can maintain regular visitations with their kids. The whole strength of this program hinges on developing healthier, more nurturing relationships.
We require these participants to be involved.
This is Chantel Hott, who works on family treatment courts for the state Supreme Court.
We want them at every doctor's appointment, every school function. We want them present in their children's lives as much as they can, as long as there's no safety concerns.
She compares the program to drug court, except family treatment court cases are civil proceedings, so parents don't risk going to jail or prison if it doesn't work out. But they could lose custody of their children. Even in a pandemic, Hott says, families have been doing better than anyone could have anticipated. With school events and appointments on hold, courts are amping up the number of video visits parents have with their kids. Also, she says, they're constantly updating the children who might be worried about why they can't see their parents yet.
Because sadly, that's their first thought, is when they don't get to see mom or dad, it's because of something has happened. So we need to make sure that there's like a full disclosure with our kids as much as they can understand at the time.
Judges like Thompson wonder what impact this freeze for in-person visits will have on the parents as well.
That's been by far the most difficult part. You know, as I have a participant, an adult participant, who's doing everything they're supposed to be doing, and I can't get them the in-person physical visits that they deserve.
These challenges come just as family treatment courts were starting to show some promising results. The Supreme Court reports that there are 50 adults involved statewide, with roughly 100 to 150 children between them. According to Thompson, there was one reunification in Boone County before the pandemic, and plans to reunify at least four more. Other newer courts have said they hope to have the same success, like Nicholas County, which was the fifth in the state to launch a family treatment court in late February.
We'll be excited when we can safely get back to doing things like normal, but until then, we're just chugging along and everybody's hanging in there making it work.
Stephanie Smith is the family treatment court coordinator in Nicholas County. She works with the judge, child protective services, and members of the recovery community to help and support parents in their journey to reunification. Smith is still able to conduct in-person visits once a week. Sometimes, she brings others from the family treatment court team with her.
You could just tell that they really enjoyed that face-to-face contact and, you know, seeing some of the other, you know, the whoever was with me from the team, it really made a difference.
Otherwise, most of the resources parents are connected to, namely those for addiction treatment and parenting skills, have moved online. Sweat patches that last 2 weeks at a time have replaced regular drug testing. The situation isn't perfect, but there's still evidence that families are benefiting from this program, says Ohio County Family Treatment Coordinator Erin Jordan.
The way of meeting the goals and the milestones just look a little bit different. And there are some things that may not quite be able to happen, but they're still going through their milestones and people have still advanced during all of this.
Jordan says they're even finding a way to make family calls work.
So something we've done with that is we've ordered books, one for the same book, one for the child, one for the parent. That way, when they video chat, the parents can, you know, read the book and the child can have the same book in their hand looking at the pictures at the same time. So just something creative and interactive, because it's hard to keep a child's attention span over video.
Courts are stated to reopen at this point on May 15th, according to the last order from the Supreme Court on April 22nd. It's unclear when in-person visits with children will resume. The state health department said in an email they're advising virtual visits as much as possible, and in-person visits are currently being considered on a case-by-case basis. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
The West Virginia Supreme Court issued an order late Wednesday confirming in-person hearings are allowed to resume on or after Monday, May 18th. The court included several pages of protocols for how courts are expected to handle reopening. While the coronavirus pandemic has all but halted out-of-state travelers and tourism in West Virginia, there are ways for residents to safely leave home, enjoy some local tourism, and learn a little history along the way. Civil War Trails, a nonprofit based in Williamsburg, Virginia, offers visitors access to 152 historical sites in West Virginia. All trails are marked with a sign and are free to explore. Liz McCormick spoke with Civil War Trails Executive Director Drew Gruber to learn about the sites and to explore what tourism in general may look like post-COVID-19 and ways the industry might recover.
You know, even though the Civil War is well known and a lot of like the pivotal battles and sites are already really well known, there's still little pieces that are kind of showing up even today in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, our understanding of the war is also constantly evolving. New research comes to light almost seemingly every week. And yeah, certainly people know about the Battle of Gettysburg. Or they'll know, how West Virginia was created out of Virginia. These big stories is what a lot of people know, and we're happy to be able to give them amenities and excuses to go visit those sites as well. But a lot of the lesser known stories are the ones that are a little bit more evocative. It's almost like you're on a hunt for history as you follow these trails turn by turn and look for these individual stories. And certainly when you're in a community like Shepherdstown, West Virginia, for example, we just put in a new sign there. A lot of those stories maybe will ring true to you because the context of who was there, their understanding of the event may not be so different as to your understanding or maybe how you would have reacted. So yeah, when it comes to telling these lesser known stories, that's one of the things we do best.
Drew, how do you fact check these stories? You know, we obviously know and have historians who have done tons of research on some of the bigger stories like the Battle of Gettysburg or John Brown's raid in Harper's Ferry. So how do you fact check?
Great question. So fact checking is the hardest part of our job. So oftentimes when people come to us with a sign or a story idea, we fact check it in a variety of ways. We have a historian here on staff who looks, we'll also refer to the West Virginia Archives, the great staff that works there. We'll dip into some of this with us. But in many cases, some of these stories are so incredibly local that they've not been written about in secondary source information. So we'll have people who will send us a box of letters that have come out of their attic, and it sometimes is the first and only evidence of this event that's been there. We'll oftentimes work with archaeologists to confirm, you know, what we think happened actually did happen. And it's almost sort of like a history's mystery. We need to take what we have in front of us, we need to weigh it with the actual evidence, and then decide if the story is worth telling.
Just to segue here, this is something that we're all struggling with, this coronavirus pandemic. It has just touched everyone. And one of the things that we've seen is just that, you know, several businesses across the country have had to close. What are you doing to help people know that you're still here, that you're still open, that you still have trails that are accessible and can be accessed safely?
So most Civil War Trails sites, in fact, all Civil War Trails sites are outside. Many of these are next to museum sites, for example, and several museums that we work with in West Virginia have been promoting and launching digital programming. So every time they launch a digital program, we make sure we tag on with them, and they make sure to encourage people to request a brochure so that it is on their mind when these travel restrictions come down and people can travel freely again. So that's sort of step one, is to make sure we're reaching folks at home. And then, of course, when folks reach out to us because they're just going stir crazy at home and they need to exercise, they need to get some fresh air, but they need to do it in a socially responsible way, we can answer that call because, of course, we're an open air museum.
Why is it important to get out right now during this pandemic?
Well, I do think our physical and mental health is the component of this that probably hasn't been addressed so fully. And that really, I think, comes down to remembering and relying on our local parks and our local amenities as that safe and responsible outlet to get a little bit of exercise. But moreover, you know, in thinking about the various governor's orders that we work under, we do want people to be safe. We want people to respect those orders, and we want people to think about the safety of their community. So certainly, you know, if you don't have to travel, please don't. However, we're also asking in that same sentence for people to help support local businesses that are offering curbside. And these businesses are integral to, you know, the economies of each one of our communities. So if you're thinking about going out for a grocery run and you have a history lesson that you need to deliver to the pupils in your household, consider swinging by a local Civil War Trail sign on your way. It'll give you an opportunity to get that history lesson, to stretch your legs, and do a safe and responsible pickup from one of your local restaurants as well.
Do you think that's a big part of how we recover from this, is that kind of, you know, adapting?
Absolutely. What is local is important not only for the residents of that community, but what is local has been very marketable for visitors from outside of our community. We know that folks travel to go see something that is expressly authentic and as an experience they can't get anywhere else. And by and large, I've not been anywhere in West Virginia where you feel like you could be in another town. West Virginia is unique in every sense of the word. So we know that a lot of people follow the Civil War Trails program as a gateway to find these authentic experiences. You may take a drive down a historic route and find farm-to-table restaurants, live music, local beer that, you know, won't show up on Instagram or any one of the, you know, travel social media finders. And that's exactly how we are going to recover as a travel and tourism program, and in West Virginia as partners. So the short answer to your question is yes, this is how we recover. We know that people are already thinking about how they're going to travel post-COVID. And a lot of that has to do with remembering and reminding yourself what the amenities are in your region that which you live.
That was Drew Gruber, executive director of the nonprofit organization Civil War Trails, speaking with Liz McCormick. Gruber says most of West Virginia's 152 Civil War Trail sites are still open to the public. To learn where the nearest site is to you, visit our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director is Glennis Board. Brittany Patterson produces our show. I'm Teresa Wills.